regards to Joseph struggling with his STA. And here we see some pretty cool insight in regards to the aspect of doctrine. As we were dealing with, as in his opening statements, do this and live, for I fear God. That even though he was under a sin nature, his orientation to the doctrine of fearing God kept him from stepping over the line and not killing his brothers otherwise. So that was the upside in regard to doctrine. Otherwise, as we know, doctrine in and of itself does not corral the STA. Paul made it clear that doctrine actually stimulated his STA. He said, until I read that lust was a sin, it wasn't an issue with me in my life. That just shows you the nature of the sin nature. When it comes to the truth and orientation to Bible doctrine, your sin nature wants to take the adversity in regards to dealing with it. What overcomes that is your positive volition and willingness to rebound when it does rear its ugly head and maintain doctrine as your standard of life overall in regards to its priorities under NPR, etc., as we have dealt with. So we see that aspect in regards to it, but yet his STA continues to drive him, for the time being at least, and it has yet to succumb to Joseph being in fellowship long enough and rendering the doctrinal energy to forgive them in regards to what they did previously to him in their life. So, 42, where we're dealing with here on our notes, verse 19. So we see in the life of this positive believer the conflict of doctrine, we can say the filling of the Holy Spirit, leading him and guiding him in this vein, and the STA vying for rulership over the real you. That, again, that's where a lot of believers just do not understand, or at least are ignorant enough that they succumb to rationalizing their STA activity in the world, trying to excuse it through other means. A common one is obviously, Satan made me do it. Well, what about your STA? Did it have any participation in this? You know. But either way, there is an inner conflict. We fight the battle, the good fight, on two fronts, overtly and outwardly, in regards to negative volition living in Satan's world, and all the pressures, the solicitations, the misinformation, seeking to establish chaos, seeking to destroy authority in life, to divide and conquer. All these tactical maneuvers that Satan engages in, we've got to go out in the world, we've got to deal with that. But most importantly, the other aspect is that we have an inward battle that we first must deal with in order to be successful in regards to our outward battle, and that's our own STA. To not let our STA succumb ultimately to all that Satan's world otherwise tries to appeal to it with, but maintain the integrity of staying in fellowship rebounding as necessary, maintaining a healthy prayer life, and your NPR and Bible doctrine otherwise in regards to your Christian life. And this is what gives us the means in order to serve God in action with honor. And obviously, it's your positive volition that drives each and every one of us to adhere to these very principles of doctrine that keeps us, our heads above water, even in these most perilous and evil of times. Obviously, we've not even reached at the peak of it. And we look around and go, shudder. You know, I remember my parents and my grandparents shuddering at the world and things that were going on in their life. They're probably very happy that they're sitting in phase three right now, not concerned in regards to all the BS that the world is having to put up with now. But here we are. But we hang in there with it. You've got to be discerning. You've got to keep the doctrine in front of you, not to overreact, not let your emotions, and again, fear. That's what the world today is trying to corral and govern, is people's fear. It starts with the great merchants. Understand that. Understand. You don't see in the Bible governments being condemned in and of themselves in regards to the murder and martyrdom of believers living in the last days. It's the great merchants. And you got to figure out who those great merchants are and what their lies are and what they're doing to solicit and maintain control of fear over society if you want to be able to avoid it in direct impact in regards to your own life in a negative way. So that's up to every individual believer to what level they deal with it in that respect. But again, it begins within the believer trying to keep their SCAs overruled and keep Bible doctrine, God the Holy Spirit in his filling role as the true rulership over life. 43, for Joseph, for the present, the weakness of the flesh maintains control. And it does that. Don't be fooled. The SCA isn't just going to sit there and be a blip on the radar. Sometimes it gets a hold of us and it just is relentless. And here, it's relentless for Joseph for the time being. But ultimately, he will rise to the occasion. Just like Jacob. Jacob ultimately always landed on his feet somehow. See, in spite of his STA. And that's the difference of mentality and mental attitude that you find with doctrinal types versus the funny world. We're living the Christian life in spite of our STAs. They're trying to live the Christian life, avoiding the STA. See, there's a major difference. It's called self-righteousness. See, if your STA gets the best of you, then there's something wrong with you spiritually. And it keeps believers off balance. And of course, as probably all of you know, I came out of that kind of background. No matter how hard I tried, I could not reach that righteous expectations that our church placed upon believers. I barely do it here, and that's with all the graces afforded me in that respect. See, anyway. So for the present, the weakness of the flesh maintains control. 44, yet as stated, it is doctrine that keeps Joseph from committing the more destructive sin, taking of life. That would be the biggest catastrophe of sin in regard to his life. 45, now in Genesis, the patriarchs are leery of outsiders and their lack of reverence for God. Again, coming from the perspective of the brothers, hearing Joseph's words, we look at an overall attitude that you might find in regards to the Hebrew race with respect to Gentile leaders. So 46, Abraham thought, quote, surely there is no fear of God in this place, end quote. Hence, his whole ordeal, this is my sister, not my wife. Genesis 20, verse 11, hence his lying, etc. And then we saw later with Isaac, pulling the same scheme. Genesis 20:11, and compare 12:12. And Abraham said, because I thought surely there is no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. And I'm not sure. I don't think 12:12 is right. Let me look. Oh, yeah, he did it twice. That's what I was referring to there. He did that twice. Two times Abraham does this. Of course, that's failure of faith rests on his part, as we know. But it also, Isaac did the same thing. So. 47, so in part the brothers could have recorded Joseph's claim as hollow, or regarded Joseph's claim as hollow. So in part the brothers could have regarded Joseph's claim as hollow. I don't trust these Gentile believers. But I don't see them being that astute, personally. Not at this point in time in their life. They're no Abraham. That's for sure. They're no Isaac either. In fact, they're no Jacob. In spite of all his failings. To mitigate the direction, on behalf of the direction I've gone with this, 48, yet the author sees Joseph as sincere. Joseph is sincere here and begs to ask why the brothers completely dismissed his admission and at least leverage Joseph's words to their advantage. You can't overlook the opportunity that they had in his statement, no matter what they might have thought of this ruler otherwise. It was an opportunity to change the course and direction of their conversation and rapport with one another. So, what I've given you is my story, and I'm sticking with it. 49, as we will see, in spite of the missed opportunity by the brothers, it does have impact. And that will be prevalent in the next set of verses. 50, aside from STA entanglements affecting Joseph's words, it was Joseph's destiny to preserve life. And fearing God by saving a life is a fundamental duty. Genesis 45:7. As he acknowledges his person to his brothers and God's plan for his life, otherwise, in spite of what they did, and God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth and to keep you alive by a great deliverance. 47:25. So they said, you have saved our lives. That is fine favor in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's slaves. And then 50, verse 20. As for you, you meant, Joseph to his brothers, you meant evil against me, but God meant it good in order to bring about this present result, to preserve many people alive. So, again, you never know how God may interact in a believer's life to bring about an ultimate scenario or event, otherwise to fulfill His word in a certain capacity. So is Joseph's destiny in terms of his serving God and God's plan for his life. God has a plan for each of our lives. That plan is centered on in terms of us observing it and recognizing it and fulfilling it under His direct will, centers on our obedience to the truth of doctrine otherwise. And God had a plan for Joseph's life, and that was to put in a position that he would be able to sustain the Hebrew race even in this time of universal, if you will, wrath that came in the event of this famine. Understand, God's in charge of the weather. And generally, famines are presented in the Scriptures as God's displeasure towards someone. Famines, fires, whole forests burning up, towns, all other kinds of fun stuff that everybody wants to write off to environmental warming. Probably the newer thing I've seen that fits within our time and history and what we know is going to appear that struck my fancy was this new cult that's come out that in as a, if you will, I think it's a manipulation of the failure of the evolutionary theory and science, that now they're coming out and saying, yes, the universe was created by intelligent design. But guess what? It was superior scientists, aliens, that provided all the life source. That's what I would say. Bring it on. Yeah. So anyway, there you have it. Take it for what it's worth. So is Joseph's destiny to preserve life. That was his highest calling. You can just kind of apply it on your own level in regards to your own life. Highest calling to get the prize or your ministry or whatever. No matter what happens along the way, you maintain the integrity in regards to what's necessary to perform adequately in that area. And he does so in this regards. 51, so doctrine retains the upper hand in spite of incidental STA interference or negative omission by the opposing party. Doctrine still is applauded in this whole situation. That's phenomenal. You can't undo God's plan. You can't undermine God's word. And even for the just positive believer who will hang in there with it in spite of their STA failures, doctrine will prevail. See? That's the power that we draw on. Obviously, fulfilled through the person of Jesus Christ. That's our salvation, phase two. Bible doctrine. And it retains the upper hand ultimately, as it obviously, through application and positive volition, kept Joseph from killing his brothers. 52, principle, the one who fears God cares for the needy. Exodus 1:17. In regards to Moses and God protecting him as the Pharaoh sought to engage in infanticide to kill off all the newborns, males. But the midwives feared God and did not do as the king of Egypt but commanded them to let the boys live. So there was a passive resistance. Understand, we're under obligation doctrinally to be obedient to civil authority, but never at the expense of doctrine any more than any other commitment or loyalty to any other person or organization is to compromise Bible doctrine. And here, obviously, for authority to say to go in and kill people, to refrain and refuse to do so, is righteous before God. Words I would want to say to the authority then, I cannot speak, or I shouldn't anyway, in Bible class, especially on video. You've got to understand that there's a higher authority that we appeal to. That's why in the angelic conflict, postulation becomes such direct targets in regards to the negative world, because they know we do not roll their way. They know that indeed we will uphold and hold to the standards of doctrine in spite of what they may do to override it or to change it. Leviticus 19:14. For people that may be physically challenged, handicapped in some form or fashion. 14, you will not curse a deaf man. Just because they can't hear doesn't give you the right to cuss them out or put some oath of cursing upon them. Nor place a stumbling block before the blind. Walking down the street and stick your foot out and trip them. No, you don't do that. Even the cosmos recognizes, you know, how cruel and evil that is. But you will revere your God. That's fear God. I am the Lord. So you treat people respectfully. And those who may be physically challenged otherwise, you especially don't go out of the way to make their life any harder. And you do what you can to help or support otherwise. Deuteronomy 6, 2 and 13. But that's part of fearing God. Obviously, you wouldn't do that to anybody in class, hopefully, if they had that type of physical constraint in their life. And you shouldn't do it out there in the world either. What kind of witness is that? Deuteronomy 6, 2. In terms of being obedient in regards to God's, this is commandment, the statutes, the judgments, verse 1, which the Lord your God has commanded me to teach you. In regards to the Mosaic law, that you may do them in the land where you are going over to possess it, so that you and your son, your grandson, might fear the Lord your God, to keep all his statutes and his commandments. This is all apropos in regards to fearing God. which I command you all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. See, that's what blesses you in your life. And then verse 13, as an example, you shall fear only the Lord your God, and you will worship Him and swear by His name. Do not fear men, what they can do to you. Put you in concentration camps, kill you, whatever. All the economic upheaval to create chaos, to undermine societies, to gain control. Don't worry about it. God's provided our living grace all these years. What makes you think He's going to stop now? If you're martyred out of here because of it, so be it. You know, there's a sure prize. You can stay in fellowship long enough to get out of here. You know, all these things. But where the rest of the world runs around like chickens with their head cut off. And I don't think there's anything more fascinating to watch if you've never seen that happen. First time I saw on Grandma and Grandpa's farm, my uncle said, "Hey, you, Kenny, you want to see something?" That was my younger name. We went out there and they had to get the chickens. Of course, Grandma had, 11 kids. So they ate a lot of chicken. And you had to look out for the quills. It's like bones and fish around that house. But anyway, and he pulled the chicken's head off. He says, "Watch his eyes." And I looked at the chicken's head with his eyes open. The body was flopping all over the place. The second, the moment those eyes closed, that body just, bam. That was weird. That was so weird. "Do it again, Uncle Carl." So, you know, why did I think of that? I just did. I had a couple, aunt and uncle that is fairly close to me in age. You can imagine my mom was the oldest of the kids. So to care for the needy. Got me off my thoughts. Point 53 in verse 19 now. Joseph then states revised grounds in the brothers' test of integrity. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers be confined in your prison, but for the rest of you go carry grain for the famine of your household. M. Ken, Tim, Akkad, Asar, Bet, Bayeth, Mishamar, Wow, Atim, Halak, Bo, Shever, Rehobon, Famine, Bayeth, Hunger of the House. So 54, instead of only one brother going back to Canaan, nine are now allowed to go, making it possible to bring back enough grain for all concerned. That's definitely a more plausible way to make sure that his family is taken care of. So 55, this fact alone should embed subconsciously in Jacob's and others' mind that there is some grace extended by this ruler, making Joseph's command more palatable. So, again, you know, it's easy enough for us to pick up on this. I understand that they're caught up in the moment, the brothers. But these subtleties that are coming out in regards to this situation. Okay, so he's not going to try to kill us all. He's only going to kill one of us. But the fact that he's given enough grain so they go back and feed their households, obviously, this puts a different light in regards to this, quote, evil ruler, end quote, that they have otherwise perceived. So this fact alone should embed subconsciously, at least, 55, in Jacob's and others' minds that there is some grace extended by this ruler making Joseph's command more palatable to go back and at least feed your families. 56, that is, supporting their living grace needs shows an element of goodwill. He extends goodwill to them. I'm not going to let your family starve. 57, the choice they must make now is which brother will remain incarcerated. And that's a whole another interesting scenario. 58, quote, which of the brothers will sacrifice his freedom for the common good, end quote. Will anyone stand up and volunteer? By all indications, nobody does. Verse 59, the one part of the original command that remains unnegotiable now is restated in verse 20. Quote, and bring your youngest brother to me so your words may be verified and you will not die. Wow, aka, kathon, bo, el, wow, amar, devar, wow, lo, muth. 60, Joseph makes clear that the penalty of death is the club he has been waving over them. That's to put the real fear of God in them, if you will. And it does, in a really kind of an amusing way, as we'll see. 61, it further insinuates here that if the brothers fail to comply, the ruler will send forces to hunt them down for execution. If he has to send out an army, if they don't come back, I'll come looking for you. That's wrapped up in this command. In other words, this doesn't release you from the death penalty otherwise, and you will not die. See, 62, again we see a secondary motive driving Joseph in his scheme. That is to see the one brother innocent and any evil against him, that's Benjamin. 63, now Moses closes the part of the second audience with Joseph by simply stating the brother's compliance, quote, and they did so, while Esau came, end quote. 64, the natural continuation of the narrative chronologically resumes in Genesis 43:16, quote, when Joseph saw Benjamin with them. And they did so. The natural continuation of the narrative then, chronologically, is 43:16, when Joseph saw Benjamin with them, recognizing that they had accomplished, completed their task. So, 65, the interlude narrative here, chapter 42, verses 21 through 40, chapter 43, verse 15, is thus designed as parenthetical or aside information. 66, this to emphasize a topical importance contrasting the brothers and Jacob's inner conflicts of soul to Joseph's. So Joseph has a conflict of soul, which we've been previewing here in these verses. Now we'll see his brothers and his father's conflict of soul from their vantage point, if you will, in that regards. All right. That finishes those verses. Today is our day to observe the Lord's table. So I'll give the deacons time to get their places.